Okay, before we begin the shiur, I just want to say that we should, our learning tonight should be a sefus merit for the shamas of those that were killed today in Yerushalayim, for their families, and for refuah shleima for all those who were injured. Okay, page 124, Parshas Todos. The Eila told us Yitzchak, but Avraham hailed us Yitzchak. These are the offspring of Yitzchak, son of Avraham. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. Vayhi Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana. Yitzchak was 40 years old. V'kach toyes Rivka. When he took Rivka, bas Besuel Arami, the daughter of Besuel of Aram, mipadan Aram, from Padan Aram, achos Laban Arami lo Leisha, the sister of Laban of Aram, for himself for a wife. Vayata Yitzchak Vashem Lanaychach Ishta, Yitzchak davened, and Yatar means he prayed intensely to Hashem opposite his wife, Kiakarahi, for she was barren. Vayaso I Hashem, and Hashem acquiesced to his prayers. Vata Rivki Ishta, and Rivki his wife became pregnant. So Rashi comments on the words Vayaso Loi, that Hashem acquiesced to him. The Pasuk says that Yitzchak was davening opposite his wife, which Rashi says means they were both davening. And then it says at the end that Hashem acquiesced to him. So Rashi points out that the Pasuk means to say, loy v'loy la. Hashem acquiesced to him, not to her. She'ein doimet tefilas tzadik ben rasha, but tefilas tzadik ben tzadik. Because the prayer of a righteous person, the son of a wicked person, is not comparable to the prayer of a righteous person, the son of a righteous person, lefikach loy v'loy la, therefore Hashem acquiesced to him and not to her. Basically, Rashi is saying that his prayers were stronger. He had greater merits to his prayers because not only was Yitzchak righteous, his father was righteous. So along with his merits, he had his father's merits. Rivka was a righteous woman, but she didn't have any kind of merits of her father to back her up. And therefore, Hashem listened to his prayers and not to hers. Now, this is a Gemara. Rashi is quoting Gemara in Yevamos, and it actually has some very interesting halachic ramifications. And that is that the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Nun Gimel, when it's talking about the laws of who is appropriate and fit to be the chazan, to be the shliach tzibur, to be the person who is leading the congregation in davening. So the Magen Avram, one of the main commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avram writes, Tov lachzor achar shliach tzibur ben tzadik. Besides the fact that the chazan himself should be an upstanding Jewish citizen, it's good to try to find a shliach tzibur, someone who will lead the davening, ben tzadik, who's not only upstanding in his own right, that his father is also upstanding. Because the Gemara that Rashi quoted, you cannot compare the prayers of a righteous person, the son of a non-righteous person, to a righteous person, the son of a righteous person. And therefore, says the Magen Avraham, it is appropriate to look for a chazan that's not only in his own right meritorious, that he also has a righteous father. The commentary of the Taz, also one of the main commentaries of the Shulchan Aruch, writes like this. He starts off quoting the Tur in the name of the Rush that says, She'ein Mailos Hashliach Tzibur Talui B'Yichas Mishpacha. The attributes of a Shliach Tzibur, of one who's going to be the Chazan, is not dependent on his lineage. The Imhu Mina Mishpacha Bezuya V'Tzadik. Let's say he's righteous, but from a very Bezuya, undistinguished, that word, undistinguished, family. Bezuya actually means more than shameful. It means unrespected family, so to speak. Toiv lekarav mizera rechoikim. It's always good to extend ourselves to bring in those who are the children of those who are distanced. Meaning here you have a person who is pious in his own right. He did it without his family support. And therefore, it's good to always, to be makarev, to support those people who are the people, the offspring of those who are unfortunately distant from service of Hashem. Now, the context of this rush, the rush was Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel from the Rishonim, was that there was an opinion that felt that because of this Gemara and Yevamos we just spoke about, that you cannot compare the prayer of a righteous, the son of a righteous, that if you actually want to hire a pious person whose family is not so upstanding, that would be considered disrespectful to hire such a person. For that, the Rush said, not so. When you're dealing with the attributes of the Chazan, the attributes of the Chazan should have, his lineage should have no bearing. On the contrary, it's appropriate to bring in, to support, to show respect for those who came not from the most supportive background. But then the Taz brings out a cuss of Rashal, the Marshal. The Marshal was from the early Achrayim, who writes, Mikamakim, im shneim shavim, let's say you have two candidates, and they're both equally righteous. Bevadai meyuchas kaid mashayna meyuchas. Clearly, the person with the better lineage should be taken over the person with not as good a lineage. Ki ein adayim et v'lo sadik ben sadik, because as the Gemara says, you cannot compare the prayers of a righteous person, the son of a righteous person, to the prayers of a righteous person, the son of a person who wasn't righteous. So according to the Marshal, the Rosh is talking about, you want to know, you want to hire a chazan. You want to reject him because he doesn't have yichus, he doesn't have a good pedigree, you don't reject him. On the contrary, support him. But if it's a question of two people, where each one is pious in his own right, if it's a question of two pious people, two people who are appropriate in their own right, they're equally appropriate, then you should go for the person with a better lineage, because as the Gemara says, you cannot compare the prayers of a tzaddik ben tzaddik, of a righteous person, the righteous person, to one of a tzaddik who is not the son of a righteous person. V'aniyaz daiti, but the Taz disagrees, and he says that he feels that the Rush, when he said that it is appropriate to show support and to bring in those who do not come from such a strong background, that was talking about even when you have a choice. Even in the case where you're talking about two people and you have a choice between the Tzaddik ben Tzaddik and the Tzaddik ben Rasha, he feels that the Rush was saying it even in that case. Even when there's a choice of a Tzaddik ben Tzaddik, you should take the Tzaddik ben Rasha. Because as the commentary of the Levushei Strud, which is a commentary on the Taz in the Magen Avraham, he explains the Taz's opinion, that the Taz is saying that when we go out of our way, so to speak, to be makarev, to show support for those who came from not a strong background, Hashem sees that we're trying to do, and that adds merit to the prayer of the Shliach Tzibur. The Shliach Tzibur is our agent. He's the person representing the Tzibur. So when Hashem sees that we chose for our agent a person that we're trying to show support for what he accomplished, that he became righteous on his own right without his family's support, that merit of bringing close such a person, of supporting such a person, Hashem will see that, and that will be an added merit for his prayers to be accepted. Therefore, the Taz was of the opinion that no matter what, who should you take for your chazan? Who's the best person? Who's the best candidate for your chazan? The person who is, of course, pious in his own right, but doesn't come from such pious background.
Well, one can also argue that it was that much harder for a person from a Rush family to reach that level, and therefore he worked that much harder, maybe he's worthier.
Okay, I mean, that was, the thing is like this, that would be a good argument, okay, whichever way you want to explain it, if you follow the opinion of the Taz, right, what does the Taz do with the Gemara and Yevamos? What does he do with that?
You know, the Parsha.
Yeah, meaning the whole idea of what Rashi says, which is a Gemara, in which we're saying that Yitzchak's prayers were accepted over Rivka's because he was a Tzaddik ben Tzaddik, what does the Taz do with that? So one approach is the approach of the Marshal, who is mentioned here, but in a different one of his works, in his Tshuvas, in his Responsa, where he makes the following distinction. He says, it depends who you're davening for. In Yitzchak and Rivka's case, they were davening for themselves. When you daven for yourself, you're better off if your father was a tzaddik. Because then you have the merit of your father supporting you. But when the issue is that you're representing the tzibur, you're representing the congregation, in that situation, he says, your schus avos, the merit of your father's, isn't necessarily going to help you. or it's not going to be as much of an advantage as the person who, as you just said, struggled on his own to come where he was without family support, in that, for the tzibur, to daven to be the agent, the representative of the congregation, it's better to have the person who actually got there on his own without family support and went through that struggle. So that's how the Marshal answers. I want to conclude that the Mishnah Brura, when he discusses this, the Mishnah Brura actually says that we should follow like the Magen Avraham says, that it's good to find a chazan who's got good, who has a good pedigree or a high pedigree, whichever way you say it. So then he says, what about the opinion of the Rush, which the Taz brought down, that says that it's always good to be makarev, to show support for the person who, as we said before, made it on his own. On that he says, umashakasav harush ein malas hashayachsim atala biyichas mishpacha. That which the Rush wrote, that there is no advantage of lineage when it comes to choosing a chazan, that even if he's from a not respectful family, but he's righteous, it's always best to bring close and support the children of those who were distant from serving Hashem. There's a difference. The Rush is talking about the person who doesn't have a respectful lineage. He's not meyuchas. He doesn't have a high pedigree of sorts. Okay? But we're not talking about his father as a Rush. The distinction that the Mishnah Brura is bringing down from the Acharonim is that the problem by Rivka was that her father was a Rush. Her father was wicked. Okay? That's the problem. That's when we say that if your father, right, is upstanding, your father is a tzaddik, or at least, you know, he's not a Russia, okay, that's when we say, okay, the prayer of a tzaddik ben Russia, a tzaddik ben tzaddik, the tzaddik ben tzaddik is going to be better because of the fact that the other one has a disadvantage of having a Russia for a father, which somehow or other will decrease the merit or in some way. But if it's not a question of the father being a Russia, the father just not miyuchas, which means they may have been unlearned, they may be ignorant, it may even be, possibly, from what I saw, that maybe they weren't even observant. But not being observant doesn't necessarily make you a Russia. Doesn't necessarily make you wicked. So that's how the Mishnah Brura makes a distinction in which he's saying, in a practical halachic sense, you should look for the person who is a miyuchas. You should look for a person who is upstanding in his own right and has an upstanding lineage. When we say, and that's what we should do. What the Rush was saying, that lineage doesn't make a difference, is it doesn't make a difference in the sense of if his father was not miyuchas, wasn't of a high pedigree of sorts. Let me just clarify something. Yeah. We should look for a tzaddik ben tzaddik, he says. It's always best to have a good lineage, or at least not to have a wicked lineage. At least not to have a wicked lineage. That the lineage should at least, should not be one of wicked parents. That's what the Mishnah Brura is saying. When we look for the tzaddik ben tzaddik, and we want it to work out what the Rush says, we mean to say that we don't want a person, we should try to get a person whose father was not, it was at least not a Russia. The person should be upstanding on his own, and the father shouldn't have been a Russia. Okay. Let's now move on. Okay. So, Rivka has very difficult labor. She gets the interpretation of what this labor is about, two different children. Let's take a look now on page 126. And Pasuk Chaf Zayin, four lines from the top. Vayigdilu ha'na'arim, and the lads grew up, vayi Esav ish de'asayid ish sadeh. Esav become a person who knew hunting, who was a man of the field. The Yaakov ishtam, and Yaakov was a wholesome man, Yoishev ha'olim, who sat in the tents. Vayav Yitzchak es Esav kisayid befiv. Yitzchak loved Esav because he sighed with fear, literally means that he brought game to his mouth, meaning what Esav hunted and caught, he brought to Yitzchak to eat. The Rivka ever says Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. So there's a famous Rashi on these words that Yitzchak loved Esav because Esav was sighed with fear, that Esav gave his hunting to the mouth of Yitzchak. He brings a medrash that Sayyid Befiv, later translated, means hunting in his mouth. What is the hunting? Whose mouth are we talking about? We're talking about the mouth of Esav. Esav's mouth was also hunting. Esav's mouth could also trap people. Shoyatzad oyisoy marameya b'devarav. Esav was actually trapping Yitzchak. He was tricking Yitzchak and fooling him with the word, with his words. Now Rashi doesn't tell us in what way was he trapping or fooling Yitzchak with his words, but the Medrash says that Esav was making himself look to Yitzchak as a very pious individual. He spoke very piously. And because of the way that he spoke, Yitzchak was convinced that there was a level of piety to Esav. And what were these? But Esav was really tricking him. Now, what exactly was Esav saying so pious that was tricking Yitzchak? And the Medrash says that Esav was asking, how do you take miser? How do you tithe straw and salt? Straw and salt, there is absolutely no obligation to tithe. Esav was trying to look very pious by saying, how do you tithe even those things that don't need to be tithed? And this was how he was giving this very pious impression to Yitzchak, and he fooled Yitzchak. So the question is like this. It would seem that if Esav is trying to trick Yitzchak and look very pious, you know, this example of trying to asking how to tithe salt and straw is a good way of doing it. But we could ask, is that the only way to do it? Of all things, of all ways, of all mitzvahs to take and try to look overly pious, right? Misering salt and straw is the only way that he could find something to ask about, to look very pious about? This is the only thing he could ask about? So I'm going to share with you a thought from the Shem Shmuel. Shem Shmuel, this is from a sefer called Likutim Sefer Shem Shmuel, selections from the Sefer Shem Shmuel. That's where I saw this. And the Shem Shmuel explains like this. He explains that in life, or in the way Hashem created the world, there are things that are considered primary and things that are considered secondary. In Hebrew, in the Torah lexicon, we call that Iker and Tafel. Iker means the main thing, the primary. Tafel means secondary, right? In life, life is full of primary things and secondary things. In the most encompassing way in life, the most encompassing example that we have of an Iker, of a primary and something secondary to it, is Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh. The world to come and this world. Our sages say, prepare yourself in this world for the next world. This world is the chamber that leads into the main ballroom, which means that the Iker, the primary thing, is Olam Haba. Olam Hazeh, this world, is not the main thing. It's secondary to the world to come. Okay? We have other examples of primary and secondary. Imagine you have a fruit with a peel. So the flesh of the fruit is the primary, right? And the peel is the secondary. And, you know, in life we have to make sure not to fadjei, not to mix up what's primary and secondary and switch places. Person has to make sure not to make Olam Hazeh, this world, into the primary and Olam Haba into the secondary, okay? Foolish people, right, make the peels more important than the fruit. However, when we actually take these secondary things and we use them to serve, to promote the primary, they're there to serve the primary, then even the secondary things gain their own value. So therefore the Shem Shmuel says, if we treat Olam Hazeh, this world, secondary, in serving Olam Haba as a preparation for Olam Haba, so then he says the light of Olam Haba permeates our physical life and sanctifies it. it gains value. What's tuffel is secondary gains value from the primary when it is recognized as a secondary and used to serve the primary. In the halachic sense, with the other example that we gave, regarding the, it becomes very relevant regarding the laws of tumah and tahara, which means that if we can see a skin or a shell as serving the fruit, then it becomes a shomer to the pri, it becomes something that is protecting the pri, and it gains value also, value that it can also become susceptible to tumah. If it doesn't have any kind of value, if it doesn't mean anything regarding the fruit, then it's not susceptible to tumah. But if now we see it, so to speak, as part of the fruit, because we see it as secondary and serving the fruit, so now it also becomes somewhat like the fruit, gains the value of the fruit, then it also now can become susceptible to tumah, and to ritual purity and impurity. But in life, we have primaries and secondaries, and it's our job in life to keep our focus to make sure that we, that what is secondary and serves the primary. Regarding Esav and Yaakov, as many commentaries say, what was Yitzchak's intention of giving the firstborn blessing to Esav instead of Yaakov? And the Malbim, many commentaries say that Yitzchak knew who Yaakov was, Yitzchak knew who Esav was, but rather, Yaakov, who was the tzaddik, the righteous person, dedicating his life to studying Torah, he's the primary. He is the main one. He is the main focus. He is the goal. He is the goal. Esav, who was not meant to be like Yaakov, was meant to be secondary. He was meant to be secondary to Yaakov. He was meant to serve Yaakov, to support Yaakov. By being blessed with the firstborn rights, he would be blessed with the material blessings of the world by which he could support Yitzchak. He was meant to be secondary to Yitzchak. And when he would be second, and when he would recognize that he's secondary to Yitzchak and support and serve Yitzchak, now Esav gains value. Because now the kedusha, the sanctity of the primary Yaakov, now comes onto Esav, and he has a share in it. But Esav didn't want to hear that. According to the Shem Yishmuel, this was something that was, from the outset, was meant to be that way. From the outset, Yaakov was primary, Esav is secondary, and Esav in his secondary role was meant to serve Yaakov. But Esav didn't want to hear that. Esav didn't want to accept that. And therefore, when Esav was told by Yitzchak that he's going to get the firstborn rights of the Shem Yishmuel, in Esav's mind, what was going to happen was, is that he was going to get everything. Perhaps he meant to bump off Yaakov already earlier, because of the fact that he wanted to be primary. Meaning he didn't want to accept his role as secondary, and he wanted to be primary. Okay, problem was that Yaakov got the blessings, okay, and he saw himself remaining secondary, unless he would go in and kill his brother. But even earlier than that, Esav understood that he was meant to be secondary, and he did not want to accept that role. And because he didn't want to accept that role being secondary, that was reflected in the questions that he asked. Because there's a very interesting medrash at the end of Parshas Vayishlach that says like this, HaTeven v'hakash v'hamoitz. Okay, the teven is the straw, the kash is the bran, and the moitz is the chaff. Not sure exactly what each one is, but it's in every stalk of wheat, you've got a couple of parts. You've got the actual kernels, you've got the chaff, you've got the stalk, you've got the bran, okay? And we understand that everything like the chaff and the stalk and the bran are clearly secondary to the wheat. However, the Medrash tells the parable to HaTeven V'Akash V'Hamoitz. You've got all these, the straw, the chaff, the bran, Merivim Zem Zeh, they're arguing with each other. Zeh B'Shvili Nizra HaSadeh. You know why the field was planted? It was planted for me. I'm the main product here. V'zeh oimer b'shvili nizra ha-sadeh. And the other one says, no, I'm the main product. Amar achitim, so the wheat kernels say, hamtinu ha-shatavai ha-goyren. Let's wait until the goyren, meaning the ingathering time. V'anu yoytim b'shvil ma nizra ha-sadeh. And that'll become very clear for which part was the field planted for. Bo l'goyren, it came harvest time. The yachts and the storage time, everything was brought into the silo. The Yatsuba Rabbias was Raisa. So what is the field owner do? What's his first thing? He's gonna winnow. He's gotta winnow the grain. Halach Lai Hamais Beruach. Okay, that's the end of the chaff. Okay. Notala Sateven. He goes ahead and he takes the straw. Vishlich Alaret. What does he do with it? He throws it on the ground. Venotala Sakash Vasarfai. When it comes to the bran or the chaff, whichever one this is, he burns it. Then he takes the wheat kernels, the ice and cream, makes a nice big pile of them. The chamish everybody who comes by kisses them. Okay, so eventually it becomes clear who's the main product here. What was this all made for? Kach akum halalu, the same way the nation of the world, each one says we're the main one. For us, the world was created, and the Jewish people say, okay, wait until the day comes when it becomes very clear for whom was the world created. And this is the end of Parshas Vayishlach that relates to Esav. Okay? So here we have this Medrash, right, that the Medrash talks about the argument on this stalk of wheat. Wheat is the sustenance, wheat is bread, that's the sustenance of the world. So here the Medrash makes this parable about all these different parts of the wheat stalk arguing who is going to be the main part until the main part says, you know, you can keep fighting what you want. Eventually it could become clear who's the main thing. With that, says Hashem Yishmuel, we can now understand why Esav asked his questions about how do you tie the chaff, okay? Now, or how do you tie the tevin, straw, okay? Now, when it comes to the laws of Truma and Maisa, right, being secondary, serving the primary, doesn't help you. It's not going to make you now be, Maisa is going to have to be taken from you. You got to be the food. You have to be the food. You have to be the human food. You have to be the food. When you're the food, that's when Truma and Maisa separated from you. And if you're not considered the food, okay, then you are, again, you're part of this whole stalk, but you're a secondary. You don't count like the main thing. So Esav has this thing. He has this problem. He doesn't like this secondary concept. He doesn't like the role of the secondary. That's his whole problem. That's what he's fighting. And that's reflected in his question. His question is about tevin. It's about straw. It's about that secondary part of the wheat stalk, where he's trying to say, no, let's take Maisa from that too. Let's not start he doesn't want these secondary roles. He doesn't want these roles of a secondary thing that don't count. And therefore he says to his father, when he wants to show his piety, he says, how do you tithe straw? Straw should also be food. I consider it food too. I want to make it food. I want to be very pious. I want to consider everything food because I want to make a mitzvah out of everything. Really, what he wants to do is he wants to get rid of this secondary role. He wants to break that secondary role. He wants to fight that concept of secondary. And therefore, he asked, that's why he used that mitzvah for the question. Because in that mitzvah, we have this concept, this secondary role, where something is there, it's a part of it, it's actually used, but because it plays a secondary role, it doesn't have any value regarding Meiser. That concept, the idea of the secondary role and the lack of value to the secondary, that is something that Esav sees is being put on him, and he wants to fight that. And the same thing with the question of tithing salt. Salt has no intrinsic value. The value of salt is because it serves something else. It serves something primary. So again, Esav says, no, we got to tithe salt. I want to tithe salt also. Because it's all part about breaking that secondary role, that concept of the secondary part that doesn't have the saint, that doesn't have the value. That's how he sees himself being branded, and he wants to nullify that. He wants to break that, and that's reflected in the questions that he asks. So the questions are about trying to show himself being very pious, but the example of what he used was actually an example that reflected what he was trying to battle, which was that role of the tuffle, of the thing that's secondary. Okay.
Can I ask you a question? I'm always confused about is there are two things here. One is the chora, which he sold. That's the firstborn. That's the inheritance right.
Right.
And then there's the bracha, which is the thing that the trick to the end. Are there two separate things? Does the baracha of the bechor always go? Do they go hand in hand?
They should be going hand to hand, but Esav didn't want it to happen.
Right, but so when Yitzchak got the bechor, should he have automatically gotten this baracha of the firstborn? But Yitzchak couldn't give it to him if he didn't know that they made this.
Yitzchak didn't know.
Yeah.
He didn't know.
Right.
Which is why it went to Esav and Esav.
Because of that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's now move on. And let us take a look on page 132. Last word on the page. And it was when Yitzchak became old, and his eyes became dim from seeing. He was blind. So there's a medrash on these words that is a fascinating medrash. Medrash says like this: on these words of Yitzchak became old and his eyes became blind. Rabbi Huda bar Simon said, Avraham tava zikna. Avraham demanded from Hashem old age. Which means he should look old. Until Avraham, okay, you got old, you didn't look old, you didn't become old, you lived your life, and when time was up, it was over.
You couldn't have kids. That was the whole thing about sorrow.
That is true. That is true. That's a good point. It'd have to be based on appearance. That's a good point. It'd have to mean appearance. Okay? Omar lefanav rebbeinu elamim adam ubenoi nechnasim lamakim. You know, if you don't have zikna, if you don't have this old appearance, a father and a son are going to enter together. You don't know who to give the honor to. They both look the same. They look like the same age. How are you going to distinguish between a father and a son to know when they come in together who to give the proper honor to? But now that you crown him, it's a word, ma'atre, you crown him, okay, with zikna, with the appearance of old age, now people know who gets the honor. That's a good point. You're demanding an appropriate thing, and we're going to start from you. Okay. Avram was the first one to gain that old appearance. Okay. Yitzchak demanded something too. Yitzchak demanded something that was not, seemingly according to the Medrash, was not existing until this point of time. Or until a certain point of time at least. Yitzchak tava yisurin. Yitzchak demanded suffering. Omer afan of Rebbeinu Eilamim. He said, Yitzchak said to the Rebbeinu Shlomo, Master of the World, Adam beis below Yisurin. If a person dies without any suffering, Midas hadin mesucha kenegdai, then he's got a lot of judgment to face. If he doesn't have the suffering to wipe away his sins, or at least some of his sins, when he has to face judgment, he's going to face a very strict judgment. Mitarech sha'atamevi olav Yisurin. But once you bring upon him suffering, ein Midas hadin mesucha kenegdai, then the attribute of justice won't be as severe against him. Good point. I'm starting with you. Until now we don't find any mention of Yisurin, of suffering. The fact that Yitzchak went blind was the fulfillment of what Yitzchak demanded, suffering. A certain degree of suffering. Because until now, apparently, there was no suffering. You lived your life, you did what you had to do, either you did what you had to do, you didn't do what you were supposed to do, and then comes judgment. Yitzchak says, well, Rebbeinu Shalom, if you give a person suffering, you'll minimize the judgment. Rebbeinu Shalom says, good point, and you're going to be first. That's why he went blind, according to this Medrash. What did Yaakov... Excuse me?
Physical suffering.
Yes. What did Yaakov ask for? Yaakov chidesh chayli. Yaakov, the Medrash, Yaakov tava es hachayli. Yaakov demanded sickness. which really means that you shouldn't, with what I understand it as, you shouldn't just die. It should actually be a point where you, so to speak, get sick, and the process begins, and then you die. If a person dies without sickness, right, meaning without something letting him know that death is approaching, how's he going to start working out things for his children?
Why is suffering not good enough?
Because suffering apparently does not mean you're going to die from it. Suffering means to suffer. Yitzchak became blind and he lived a lot longer. This means Yaakov's sickness is the sickness that eventually you die from. What's the point of that, says Yaakov? Because like this, you'll be able to, you know, divvy up the inheritance. There won't be fighting. You'll be able to leave a will, an ethical will, whatever it is that you want. You'll be able to leave a will and your wishes to your children before you pass on. And therefore, Yaakov says, a person should become sick and die from the sickness. And Rebbeinu Shlomo says, good point. And they'll start from you. Okay. So the Chafetz Chaim in this week's parsha focuses on what Yitzchak innovated, which was suffering. And the Chafetz Chaim paints the picture like this. So the Chaim paints the picture that after 120 years, we stand before Hashem in judgment. So what takes place in the judgment? In every judgment, you've got defenders or advocates, and you have prosecutors. The advocates for every person are the mitzvahs that a person did. Every mitzvah creates a malach, creates an angel, as the Pirkei Avos says. And those angels now come to stand, to support, to advocate on behalf of this neshama for what he did during his lifetime. But he also has sins. And the sins also create angels, prosecuting angels. Prosecuting angels that actually come to prosecute and to demand judgment and punishment. And there's different types of angels. You've got big ones, you've got small ones, and the sizes really depend on the actions that created them. How did you do them? You know, if you did a mitzvah without intent, it's a mitzvah, but it's not a strong mitzvah, so your angel is kind of like a little on the skinny side. Okay? And if, let's say, you did it for insincere reasons, okay, then again, your malach is a little bit on the weak side, okay. On the other hand, the same thing goes for a sin. If you do a sin without enjoyment, okay, your sinful angel will be a little bit on the weak side. If you do a sin with enjoyment, right, then that's going to create a nice big strong prosecuting angel. And unfortunately, we sometimes do our misdeeds with greater intent and enjoyment than our mitzvahs. And a person can find themselves, says the Chafetz Chaim, in a predicament. So what does Hashem do? Then Hashem asks for the suffering to come. When a person suffered in their lifetime, and there were angels that were created from the suffering, now Hashem calls them to come. And they now come and do their thing. They come and they support the person who went through the suffering. They come, as the Medrash says, it weakens the judgment. It actually takes away some of those. It supports a person. He went through the suffering. He gains atonement. Well, if he gains atonement, then some of those angels, those prosecuting angels, are removed. So that is what the Medrash here means. The Medrash here means, that's what Medrash says. The Medrash says that Yitzchak demanded suffering because then the attribute of judgment won't be as strong. And the Chafetz Chaim paints the picture that at the end of it, that when the judgment is being made, and we're looking for all the advocates that we can get, when our mitzvahs can't be strong enough to advocate for us, or our mitzvahs in their totality can't be strong enough to advocate for us, the suffering will add to our side. The suffering will come to our side. They will support us like our mitzvahs. They'll bring atonement for us like our mitzvah. They'll bring atonement for us, and that will hopefully help the person in his final judgment. Okay. Let's go to the end of the parsha. After Yaakov takes the brachas from Esav, and Esav wants to kill Yaakov, So Rivka knows, becomes aware of Esav's plans, and she convinces Yitzchak that Yaakov cannot marry any of the local girls. She needs to go to her family to find a wife. So if you take a look on page 142, Pasuk Ches, a few lines from the bottom of the page, Vayar Esav Kirois B'nois Kanan Be'ena Yitzchak Aviv. And Esav saw that the Canaanite daughters whom he had married were evil Be'ena of Yitzchak Aviv in the eyes of Yitzchak his father. Vayelach Esav Yishmael. Esav went to Yishmael. Vayikachas Machalas Bas Yishmael Bas Avram Achais Nevoyas Anash Avoy Le'isha. So Esav went to the family of Yishmael and he took Machalas, the daughter of Yishmael, the son of Avram, the sister of Nevoyas, as a wife, in addition to his other wives. So, Torah is telling us, seemingly, Esav sees that his wives are not pleasing to his father, you know, and it took him to realize this, right? When he sees, as the Pesukim before say, when he sees that Yitzchak sends Yaakov away to find a wife, not locally, okay, and he sees that, oh, now he realizes that his wives are not good in the eyes of Yitzchak, his father. What they do, how they behave, that doesn't seem to bother him so much. But now he comes to the realization that it's bothering Yitzchak. So then what does he do? He goes ahead and he takes another wife. He takes the daughter of Yishmael. Now the Arachayim suggests a possibility that what's happening here with Esav is not just or not about pleasing his father, but it's also about supporting himself, which is that even though he did not get the blessings of the firstborn, he begged his father Yitzchak for a blessing, and Yitzchak gave him a blessing. Now Esav says, you know, if these Canaanite women are not good in my father's eyes, that means I don't have the right lineage for my children, well then, maybe I won't get those blessings. I won't be able to merit those blessings. So I gotta go get a different wife, and she should not be a Canaanite, and she'll be from the family of Abraham, and with my new generations that I will now have more, I'll have children of a better lineage, but I won't have that corruptness of the Canaanites in them, so I'll be able to merit the blessing that my father gave me. So the idea of the Rechaim is that Abraham again is doing it, Esav is doing this, is taking on a new wife, because he's afraid that marrying the Canaanites would be a reason to lose the blessings that Yitzchak at the end gave him. Which means that the Arachayim is making a connection between what Esav is doing now, not just to what he sees Yitzchak telling Yaakov to not to take a local wife, that's actually connected to the whole episode before. The episode before where Yaakov takes the brachas from Esav, Esav got some kind of a bracha, and now he sees that his father's not happy with his wives, he needs to take a new wife to make sure that he doesn't lose those blessings. Again, the Shem Yishmuel connects it in a broader way to the episode before. And he says that Esav, as wicked as Esav is, Esav, this is my addition, Esav understands that things are working here on a higher plane. Meaning, what's happening here with the blessings is the future, the destiny, the legacy of Abraham and Yitzchak. Who's going to be the one who's going to be the heir of Abraham, the heir of the chosen people? Esav understands that, and Esav understands that this works works differently than your regular physical material issues of the world. And typically, and our sages say, if you see life's not going the way you thought it, the way you see it should be going, things are not going properly. You know, again, from your perception, they're not working properly. So what do? You do tshuva. You go into yourself, right? Introspection is now what's necessary. If I see things are not going the way they should be, then there's something wrong with me, possibly. Then there's something wrong with me. And I need to correct what's wrong with me. And if I correct what's wrong with me, so then Hashem, then I'll be able to merit things to go in the proper way. I mean, that's what suffering is meant to do. It's meant to be a wake-up call. Hashem is saying, do tshuva. And when you do tshuva, things go back in order. When you have the merit and you're acting properly in serving Hashem, then that's your best way of getting keeping things in order. So Asa realizes, okay, that things are not working out the way he wants to. He wanted to get the firstborn right. He wanted to get the firstborn right. It didn't happen. Something wrong. Something's got to get fixed. Got to make some kind of adjustments. Okay, the game plan's not working. We've got to make some kind of adjustments. So what should Asaph say? What should Asaph do? He should look at himself and look what he has to correct. No, not Asaph. Asaph doesn't look in himself. He looks outside of himself. He knows whose fault it is? His wife's. That's the problem. So Asaph understands he has to do some kind of adjustment, okay, besides killing Yaakov. He realizes he's got to do something. Something is not in the sphere of everything around him in his life. Something is not going right. And that has to be corrected in order for him to have his plan work out. But he doesn't look at himself. He doesn't look at correcting himself. He looks outside of himself. Shemishmo points out the name Asaph is spelled Aleph Shin Vav, Aleph Shin Vav. The same word as Asu, they made. A name shows us the character of the person, the essence of the person. Asaph is made. He's fine. He's made, he's whole, nothing wrong with him. The gematria, the numerical value of Asaph, Ayin is 70, Shin is 300, Vav is 6. Total of 376. Take the word Shalom. Shin is 300. Lamed is 30. Mem, 40, 70. Vav is 6. The numerical value of Asaph and Shalom is the same. Asaph is at peace with himself. Shalom means peace. It means whole. Asaph, he's at peace with himself. He's whole. Nothing wrong with him. Where is the problem? The problem is his wives. Which means that Asaph comes to some kind of realization that he should not have married Canaanites, right? Aaron wouldn't want Yitzchak to marry a Canaanite, and Asaph married Canaanites. But now he sees when Yitzchak tells Yaakov not to take a local, okay, that he shouldn't have taken a local. He shouldn't have taken Canaanites. So what has he got to do? He's got to now create a new future. He's got to create a future of a better lineage. What better lineage than a son of Abraham? A son of Abraham. A son of Abraham who received his own blessings for the future. That is what needs readjustment. That what needs fixing. Not him. Not him per se. But rather something outside of him. It's his wives. Yeah, he made a mistake. He took the wrong kind of wife. He shouldn't take a Canaanite. The Canaanites are cursed. He shouldn't have taken them. Okay, so what will he do? He'll take a new wife. He'll make a new set of children, he'll create a new lineage, and he'll kill Yaakov, and everything will fall into place. That's how Asaph sees everything coming together. That's why Asaph is taking a new life now. Not just because he's seeing that Yitzchak tells Yaakov, don't take a local girl. It's a continuation from before. Asaph realizes the game plan is not working, he's got to make adjustments. But not himself. And his wife's. That'll put everything together. That's Asaph, because he's made, he's complete. Take a look at Yaakov. Yaakov's name is based on what word? Heel. The lowest part of a person's body. Lowest part of a person's body. Yaakov sees himself as low. Yaakov is humble. Yaakov is always open to the idea of improvement. Yaakov realizes if you're a human being, you always have to improve. There's a Gemara in Brachas that says that after Avraham Avinu was called Avraham, his name was changed to Avraham. You're not allowed to call him Avram. Yaakov's name was changed to Yisrael. You can still call him Yaakov. Why? Because the Torah still calls him Yaakov. Yisrael is the name Kisarisim Elekim Vanoshim. You strived with men and with Hashem and with men, and you accomplished. The name Yisrael represents accomplishment on Yaakov's part. But the Torah still calls him Yaakov, says Hashem Yishmuel, because Yaakov always still saw himself as a Yaakov. Even as a Yisrael, with all the accomplishments that he did, he still saw himself as the heel. He was still humble. He still saw himself that with everything he's accomplished, he still has more and more to accomplish. So you can still call him Yaakov, because the Torah calls him Yaakov, says the Gemara in Brachas, because Yaakov still saw himself as Yaakov. He still saw himself in contrast to Esav, who saw himself as perfect. Yaakov always sees himself as the heel, modest, humble, lowly, always, always ready and understanding that there's always place to improve, always place to grow.